Good evening and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. Mayor Brandon Johnson visits Springfield to bang the drum for revenue to local governments and push back on Bears incentives.
In order for us to ensure that our local municipalities have the support and the funds to protect working people, we're calling on the General Assembly to do what's right.
But with the end of session fast approaching and lawmakers eager to keep the Bears in state, it's not clear if those demands will land.
They know that ICE is still present in our communities, and that if they are swept up in the next mass deportation operation, DACA may no longer offer that protection that it offered to them in the past.
Growing fears as deferred action for childhood arrivals recipients face lengthy renewal delays. Meantime, Illinois State Police launch an investigation into a fatal shooting by federal immigration agents last year.
Unfortunately for Chicago consumers, People's Gas has been a rate hike machine.
Utility watchdogs and the state attorney general slam People's Gas's skyrocketing proposed rates. And speaking of the skies, it's a bird bonanza as Chicago sees its first eaglet born in more than a century and female piping plovers return to area beaches.
And now to our Week in Review plovers panel, sorry. Joining us are Rob Hart of WBBM News Radio, Tinas Vondelis of the Chicago Sun-Times, our own Patty Wetley of WTTW News, and Michael Liptrot of Block Club Chicago. Thank you all for being here. Lots to talk about. Before we get to those stories and more, family, friends, law enforcement, they gathered this morning to lay Chicago police officer John Bartholomew to rest after he was fatally shot at Endeavor Health Swedish Hospital. Here's a bit of that service.
It's as if an angel has left the earth. If you knew him, you knew his heart was full. His heart was pure. Heart of gold.
So, Rob, they were gathered at a St. Andrews in Edgewater before a long funeral procession to the cemetery out in River Grove. Looked like just a massive turnout today.
It is a very somber occasion anytime a Chicago police officer loses his or her life, because even though we have many discussions on this program and elsewhere about the policy around policing, this gives you an idea of the human toll that the job can take. And I covered the funeral of Officer Paul Bauer several years ago in Bridgeport. And that day, there were officers from hundreds, maybe thousands, of departments across the country that descended on the church in Bridgeport to pay their final respects. And we saw that today with the procession from Edgewater to River Grove.
Yeah, Patty, you witnessed a bit of that procession.
Yeah, I was out on Lawrence Avenue, and there were people from the neighborhood who just wanted to stand out and pay their respects as the procession passed. And it was actually really moving and like Rob said, very somber. I think it really struck me when you see it pass, not only all the other officers thinking what must be going through their minds, but then seeing the family come, you know, in vehicles behind and just realizing that, you know, there's the person that they've lost. So there's the personal loss, there's all the huge ceremony around it, but so personal to the family. And I think that was really kind of hit home. The people who were standing near me were very touched by that.
A very moving display today.
It was.
All right, well, Tina, Mayor Brandon Johnson spent some time in Springfield this week. What was on his agenda?
He is looking for some kind of new tax approval in Chicago. He's also talking about how he does not want the Bears to leave the city, even though things are very much in the works on that. I think that Chicago has not been in the discussion for the Bears in a long, long time. There's also this like local government distributive fund where the state income tax money goes towards municipalities. And he decided that I'm going to band up with these other mayors and stand up for this, that we want more. Governor Pritzker's office has said that there's a hold harmless, that they're not going to get less. And they're arguing we need more. The city's actually saying that they would lose some money. So it's just interesting that during this Bears negotiation, he's coming out at this time. He came out on Latino Unity Day. So I heard from some legislators that said, why didn't you come out for Black Caucus events earlier this year? Why didn't you come out earlier to negotiate with the Bears? I also heard that a couple of people said that they would not vote for the revenue package of Pritzker's budget if there were new taxes for Chicago. So he's definitely seeing some resistance already.
Interesting, which is, you know, sort of par for the course with what he's dealt with in Springfield in recent years.
This is his third visit in his whole tenure, so they are noticing that.
Yeah.
Further this goes on, he's really just becoming between a rock and a hard place in terms of the progressive agenda and not wanting to put taxpayers' dollars towards the Bears and keeping them, but also do you want to be the mayor that lets them go? And especially with Arlington Heights, Indiana, putting massive legislation behind getting the Bears to attract them there, it's going to be tough for any type of compromise on taxpayer dollars going towards the Bears being sizable enough to have a real stake in Chicago being still the home of the
and
Bears.
There is some help from the Michael Reese area that he actually thinks the Bears should go to. There's bonds to build alongside railroads in the Bears bill. So these legislators are saying, we actually are helping you get things for the future in that bill that he doesn't like.
It's also a strange rhetorical U-turn that we saw from the mayor, where he was talking about how we can't have this property tax bill because people are hurting due to affordability. But at the same time, the taxpayers of Chicago need to put up $2 billion of their own money to build this new stadium that's south of the existing stadium. And oh, by the way, the legal interests that already derailed Star Wars, they will be brought to bear on the Chicago Bears. And a lot of critics in the football field have all said this was this made this a year, this whole process 1 year longer than it needed to be.
Yeah. Well, you know, Patty, the mayor sort of said this focus on the Bears is a mismatch from what the average person cares about. As
right.
someone fortunate enough to not cover much politics, does that sound right to
but
you?
But I'm obsessed with sports. So, you know, I think that that's a tough one because, like you were saying, do you want to be the mayor who lets the Bears leave Chicago? But by the same token, I think that there's a sense amongst some people, at least, who are like, let them go. If they don't like us, like, if they think they don't need us, then it's you can't call yourself the Chicago Bears.
Right.
You better not show any Chicago skyline shots, you know? So I think there's so much more we could be spending our money on. I think, like, how much natural resources could be rehabbed and restored and instead, so.
Right. And like Rob was saying, when it comes to it's like 2.4 out of $4.75 billion,
yeah.
2.4 coming from Chicago taxpayers.
We're still paying for the other stadium.
Right.
But I understand he's trying to say that some of this would be museum campus enhancements.
Sure.
So are we going to get a better museum campus? And what does that do for the city of Chicago at large and residents? If any of the things in one of those proposals before was like, can we have farmers markets there? Can you do something where it's not just a parking lot? Like, if there were actual benefits in a wraparound museum campus / Bears Stadium, I still am not sure $2.4 billion of our dollars.
And I always, for me, I think back to spring of 2024. The Kansas City Chiefs had a referendum on their ballot about taxpayer dollars being used to renovate their stadium campus, and taxpayers voted no.
Their Super Bowl.
Right.
Yeah,
so if a dynasty could not
have at the white hot apex of their fame,
right,
with the world's most famous singer being their most famous fan, and even then taxpayers
did not endorse it. Yep.
Like, yes, so, Indiana's throwing a lot at this. Is that going to be good down the line for the residents of Indiana? Are they going to, you know, have buyer's remorse 10
world's
years
most
from now?
Famous singer is Beyonce. Sorry. Anyway, well, you know, going back to some of the revenue stuff, though, you know, trying to get this local government distributive fund, this more money from municipalities, do you think there's any, you know, smarts behind the idea of a big coalition of municipal leaders teaming up rather than it just coming, you know, a singular ask from the city?
I do not see any sort of movement towards that. That sounds nice. Maybe that's something they could deal with next year. But in this specific budget, which they have to pass by the end of this month, it's definitely, there's no coalition that's strong enough to kind of take over that.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we're hearing some reporting that even within the Democratic caucus, there are people who are still very far apart on what this, you know, what shape this budget should take. What do we think, you know, is this going to be a messy season we're in store for?
Well, they're always messy seasons, but then they seem to come together at the end. You see, that's the one thing about social media now, is that if you're a politics junkie and a real budget sicko, you can follow every single twist and turn of the process and have an anxiety attack about every single one. And then eventually an agreement comes together at the end and everybody's happy. But this is the twists and turns portion of the process.
I do think it's a big deal that the House passed the mega project slash Bears bill when they did a whole month ahead of the deadline. That does not usually happen.
Yeah.
But we're likely to see that be, you know, like the last day.
Still some late nights in store on that one. All right, Tina, sticking with you for a second. There have been a lot of calls for local law enforcement and prosecutors to investigate the actions of federal immigration agents during Operation Midway Blitz. We learned this week about the state police launching a probe. What are the details there?
They're launching a probe into the death of Silverio Villegas-Gonzalez last September by a federal agent. This was Illinois State Police saying that they were opening it. This was the day that the Illinois Accountability Commission released their findings, which said that they believe that these agents should be charged with crimes. And so Illinois State Police is run by Governor Pritzker's people. It's not a total surprise, but this is a, you know, a legit police authority saying we need to look into this. And this is happening as the special prosecutor's situation is still ongoing. There's a ruling on it next week to see if the Cook County State's Attorney should be prosecuting, or if someone should be prosecuting these federal agents because our Cook County State's Attorney did not.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what comes out of that case.
May 11th is the date on that one.
All right. Yeah. Well, another immigration-related issue. You've been covering the delays that some Dreamers brought to the U.S. as kids have been facing renewing their DACA status. Just how long are these delays running?
More than 6 months. The government is saying that it's averaging 2 to 3 months, but I've talked to many people who are still waiting. And if you don't have your renewal, you can't work. You lose your job. You need a work permit. You need proof of that you are a DACA recipient. And so people, immigration advocates and DACA recipients think this is a way to kind of drop people out of this program. There's also processing holds from dozens of countries, and they're not talking about them. They have never confirmed that, but immigration advocates have said they look at these DACA renewals, they see a certain country, and it's just on hold.
Yeah.
And so, as you know, there's many, many, many DACA and Dreamers in Illinois and in Chicago, so there's a lot of uncertainty. There's also a ruling last week that DACA, if you're a DACA recipient, it does not protect you from being deported. So not only are they not able to work, they're also living in fear of being deported.
Yeah, a lot of folks in limbo in that situation. All right, Michael, Anjanette Young moved one step closer this week to serving on the civilian body overseeing Chicago police. Of course, this is years after she was the victim of a wrongful raid, a no-knock warrant. It's a pretty remarkable turn of events for her here.
Yes, it is, and it's definitely big in terms of the progress and seeing how in terms of the name of her book, you know, turning that pain into something productive and being able to do something and really work towards progress through that. Though she was approved by the city's police and fire committee, it was not unanimous. Mm-hmm. There's still some concern about her, as one alderman put it, enacting revenge or seeking retribution.
Is she going to be impartial?
Right, yeah. Right. And I spoke to her. I did an interview with her for her book in March, before it was even public that her nomination was upcoming. And that was something she was aware of. And I did a follow-up story with her after the mayor made his plans to nominate her public. And she was aware. And it's something that she made very clear that is not something in her purview on the CCPSA. And in fact, separately from a city government level, her and State Rep. Cam Buckner are working in Springfield to bring forward legislation that would address this from a statewide level. So I think there are some very interesting concerns, and like many things, this is becoming very politicized.
Yeah, working on reform efforts, but, you know, not necessarily someone who, you know, is going to be out there on the board as a firebrand or as someone
right.
trying to exceed her authority on that issue.
Right, right. And I think this is definitely a good step, though, for advocacy all over, because it's something that's going to really bring the mirror up to Chicago police even further, not only having, you know, these issues being advocated for and brought up, but this being overseen by someone who was a victim herself of abuses of power by Chicago police.
And the power to, you know, choose the next CPD superintendent or to send finalists to the mayor, that's a big deal, to have an actual person who was affected by this to be able to be part of that process. Not saying that they're going anywhere right now,
right.
but for the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a lot coming full circle.
I thought it was you know, interesting, at least in the reporting that I saw on this, was that city council actually took the members actually took the time to listen to her and her, the way she was answering and speaking to how she would handle the role instead of them just prejudging, but also her being able to speak to how she would actually how this would play out and how she would look at things. And that obviously impressed them that, yes, she could be even handed.
Yeah. Well, Patty, another piece of city news this week. It's been a very stormy spring. Climate change fueling more extreme weather.
Yes.
No exception here. The city's Department of the Environment is out with a new green infrastructure strategy.
It's an update to an existing strategy. First update in about 12 years. And this was actually a requirement of an EPA permit that was given to them, to the city, in 2024. So they had to update this plan. And I would say that it's very short on specifics and targets and goals, partly because in reviewing the existing strategy, what the team noticed was there's a lot of things happening in silos in different departments. Different departments in the city are deploying different kinds of green infrastructure, whether it's a playground that can hold stormwater or native gardens or bioswales or handing out rain barrels. But it's so piecemeal and they want it to be more strategic, but they also want it to be equitable and to make sure that the areas of the city that are seeing the worst of this flooding are the ones where we're focusing efforts on creating green infrastructure. But I thought the most interesting thing was they were very focused on whenever we do one of these projects, there has to be maintenance baked in at the outset for how are we going to maintain this green infrastructure? Because how many times do you see trees planted and then nobody's watering them? And so they're like, that has to be baked into green infrastructure the same way as we plan on, we're gonna have to repave a road, even though maybe we're not the greatest at planning for those sorts of things. But from the outset, and also, you know, saying there kind of needs to be a revolution in how we think about the importance of green infrastructure. And when a big project comes up, like the Bears Stadium, are we asking, you know, where's the permeable pavement? What's your stormwater retention? And making that something that has to be done, not, you know, maybe we'll think about doing it. So I think it's almost like back to the beginning. This strategy is almost like it's kind of setting reset. We need to have everybody talking together and we need to make this equitable and we need to find funding for it, which, you know, it's we all need to find funding for everything.
Yes.
And there's just not money out there for things.
Speaking of equity, it's going to be very, very curious to see when it comes to geographically, you know, how this green infrastructure is going to impact.
Well, they
like,
are
the west
very
side.
Focused on, you know, the south and west sides for sure. And, you know, a lot of things have been focused in the past on quote unquote gray infrastructure. When the Chicago River was flooding so horrifically, they were able to install, you know, a storm water tunnel. I'm not sure you can do the same kinds of solutions on the south and west side, but I think, you know, their focus will be like, if we're going to be doing these things, first we need an inventory and a map of where everything exists. We need to know where our hotspots are for flooding and then put all of those efforts into where it makes the most sense. But right now we don't have that system in place.
Yeah.
So this strategy is basically like, we need a strategy.
And I wonder if federal funding or federal opinions of environmental things will impact.
Well, that's the challenge, too, because anything that says environmental justice is goodbye.
Another hoop for them to jump through on this.
You know, I think what I've heard from folks is that they're figuring out how to write proposals, how to write grants, how to post things.
It's very smart.
To get what they need.
People in local government have a way of making that work.
Beautiful green infrastructure.
Yes.
Don't use the word green.
Yeah, right.
Make Chicago green again.
All right, Rob, Cook County Board of Review Commissioner Samantha Steele found not guilty this week on a drunken driving charge. There was, of course, that video of the stop that a lot of folks saw, but she says she was not intoxicated. And sort of the push in this case was driven more by politics.
Well, what a tangled web we weave. This This begins in the summer of 2024 when a person who worked in her office, Frank Calabrese, you see him on Twitter. Mm-hmm. He's the guy with the numbers. He's the guy with the maps whenever election night rolls around. He was working in the Board of Review office. He files a whistleblower lawsuit against her because of a request that was made of him over the course of the Chicago Bears property tax assessment. See how the writers tie up all the loose ends?
Yeah, right.
So flash forward to November. Samantha Steele is pulled over after crashing her car into several cars in the uptown neighborhood. During the trial, she made some disparaging comments about the officers who arrived on the scene. She did not cooperate with a blood test or a field sobriety test, and that she was charged with DUI. She had a bench trial. She was found not guilty this week, despite the fact that a number of witnesses felt that she was intoxicated during this. And her theory is that Frank Calabrese, you know, put everyone up to this as part of a larger harassment campaign due to this this whistleblower lawsuit. And even so, the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, they brought the charges. Right. They felt they had a case there. But she has been found not guilty, but she also lost her election.
All right. Well, the course of justice, you never quite know where it's going to go. All right. I want to get to as well, Peoples Gas looking for a $200 million hike in delivery fees for customers. Utility watchdogs and the AG say not so fast.
Boy, everybody has their hand out on this. We're talking about the city of Chicago. We're talking about green infrastructure. We're talking about a plan to replace all of the service lines to homes in the Peoples Gas service area. And anybody who has had a home improvement project knows that the price tag for your home improvement project has gone up considerably since 2021, and Peoples Gas has encountered that as well. They are asking for a rate hike to pay for this project, but a lot of utility watchdogs and the state attorney general say not so fast, and this is a time in which people are being walloped by fee increases and bill increases up and down the line.
Yeah, it's hard for anybody to feel okay about this.
And like looked at line items and saw, like, you're saying you're having to pay for something that this was a study that was paid for.
Right.
And I would also question, this has been ongoing for so long. Like, are they buying this pipe like one foot at a time, every year at a time? Like, wouldn't you think that they'd be savvy enough to write a contract that says, here's our purchase price? Like,
to me, the bottom line when it comes to these rate hikes is the reality that in March, 140,000 people in Chicago weren't able to pay their gas bill, and over $100 million in debt accrued.
Yeah. It was a cold winter, and those bills were sky
high. People were not pleased.
And just think about the support people are going to need when it comes to these rate hikes, just keeping going away,
All right, we are running out of time, but we got to get to the big important stuff
Yes.
of the week. All right, first of all, Baby Eagle, first time in more than a century. That's got to be a pretty significant development.
Yes, that's huge. I mean, there are eagle's nests around the area, and every year we get a couple little baby eaglets, but this is the first time in the city of Chicago limits that we've had successful breeding for our eagles. And I mean, you know, I think people are surprised when they see them, but it's, you know, that means that we've got the habitat for them, but it also means we have the food for them. They love our waterways and they're finding enough to fish and eat. So yeah, that's very exciting.
All right, and speaking of waterways, we're on Plover Watch every year.
Yes.
Montrose Beach up in Waukegan.
The ladies are back. We've got romance drama.
Yeah, who's back? What are we looking out for?
We've got extra bachelor men and some other random plovers that we don't know yet are hanging around. So yeah, Imani, who is the only surviving offspring of Monty and Rose, he's back. His mate Sea Rocket is back. We're hoping that they will make a love connection 3 years running. And then don't forget Blaze and Pepper up in Waukegan. They've also successfully nested 2 years prior. And then we've got Bachelor Pippin looking for love and seeming to be able to woo a lady.
It's like a soap opera out there on the beaches.
I love it.
And I know you'll be watching every story for us.
You know, I will say, people are like, what's the point? Why do we care? They're an endangered species in Chicago. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yes, and we are very happy to have them. We're very happy to have the four of you, but we are out of time. So our thanks to Rob Hart, T. Tina Svondelis, Patty Wetley, and Michael Liptrot. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
And that's our show for this Friday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. Now for all of us here at The Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. All right, it's the one-year anniversary of Hometown Boy Made Good. Pope Leo was elevated. It feels like it's been a lot longer than a year, but okay, you bring us an interesting statistic.
Well, ever since Pope Sox fan Bob was elevated to the papacy, the White Sox have had a 439 winning percentage, which is considerably better than
losing, right?
Well, before that, it was like negative 10,000.
Yeah, right.
So is this like their holy season?
They're approaching 500. That's something.
Paul Konierko wasn't in my communion class, but there's a case to be made now.
If they win a World Series, I think he's elevated to sainthood easily.
I think he's going to throw out the first pitch if they make it to a World Series.
God.
Game two, Hawk Harrelson.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports educational initiatives in the legal profession.